This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
We threw out these four options for you. You can decide that we should do one of these or go somewhere else. That's the advantage you have. And if you think you're the only vote, by all means, you can call and set the agenda yourself. 919-860-5326. The choices were Billionaires Club. According to Forbes magazine, Tiger Woods is also a billionaire in sports. LeBron James is a billionaire. And Michael Jordan. We don't have a lot of sports billionaires. We have people who own sports who become billionaires. Jordan, of course, is in several sports now, not only the owner of the Charlotte Hornets, but, you know, he's got a race team in NASCAR. And he's a big fisherman guy.
Yeah, boat at the Big Rock.
He does have a boat at the Big Rock. So we have Billionaires Club. We have the NBA Finals Game 4, which is bringing up the rear. Bolts go for three straight. And by the way, did you see the Rangers fan sucker punch? See the video of that?
No.
Lightning fan walking out of MSG last night?
No. I would. I mean, Rangers fans doing that? I would never. No. I don't believe it.
Shocking.
I believe someone
shocking,
was
I
faking
agree.
Being a Rangers fan to do
shocking,
such thing.
I agree. Apparently facing six criminal charges.
Oh, okay.
So, hey, look, that's trouble. Is Tony La Russa too old?
Oh, I just saw the hit. Okay.
Oh, yeah. See, that's a quality punch, right?
Yeah.
That Lightning fan out cold probably was halfway there anyway, judging by the way that person was walking. But still, I mean, you can't cold cock somebody like that. But I believe a crime was committed.
Yeah.
A legit crime was committed. Whether jail time will follow for something like that, I don't know. I don't know how it's going to work. But that was a criminal act. So, it's assault, all of that. There was a criminal act, sort of, a hockey criminal act, nearly committed by Jacob Trouba. I'm going to self-edit here. Did you see the Trouba?
Yeah.
Attempted elbow to Andre Palat?
Oh, yeah.
In the third quarter? Third quarter, jeez. What a dope. Third period?
It's the third inning. Top of the third.
It was bottom of the third,
actually. Was it bottom of the third?
Definitely the bottom of the third. My gosh, excuse me. What an idiot. I just can't. Anyway.
That's going on the rewind.
It is absolutely going on the rewind. Here's the thing. If you're Jacob Trouba, first of all, if you're Jacob Trouba, we know what Jacob Trouba was about.
Yeah.
We knew what he was about with the Max Domi hit and all the freaking apologizing by NHL people. Well, you know, Domi's going down. Man, look at the freaking video. Mm-hmm. Domi's head's level never changes. Jacob Trouba, because the target was put on Max Domi's back by Max Domi at the end of game 3, all of these things are true. Max Domi did something stupid at the end of game 3. He went after Ryan Lindgren. He cross-checked him in the back. Like, no need for that. I totally agree with Gerard Gallant after the game. So Max Domi's got a target, and Jacob Trouba took the opportunity to pay Max Domi back, lined him up, and did exactly what he intended to do. Exactly what he intended. He launched into Max Domi, and all of that finished through the head. That was point of contact necessarily to the head? No, but it was pretty close, and he finished through the head. And he lined him up. It was obvious. But the Hurricanes ended up shorthanded there because Stephen Lawrence came in and was given the instigator penalty. Meanwhile, Jacob Trouba also cross-checked Lawrence in the face. That was not called. You wish they were better. You wish the officials were better. They weren't. But the bottom line is Jacob Trouba is a dirty player. And we talked to Ken Danico, three-time Stanley Cup champion from the New Jersey Devils, now with the NHL Network. And he says Jacob Trouba is the best in the NHL in making the guilty look innocent. Best in the NHL at it. And I agree. Trouba's always been that player. Did it to Sidney Crosby. Did it to Max Domi. Hey, I actually, and I said this during the playoffs, I thought this hit on Seth Jarvis was legit. I did not think that hit was bad. I didn't. And of course, you know, I understand Kane's Twitter losing their minds when I said I thought the hit was fine. I've spoken to people within the Hurricanes organization, all agreeing, hit was fine. Can't do anything about that. That's part of hockey. But Trouba tried to get Andre Palat yesterday. Palat just ducked it. His head was up, and he saw it coming, and he went under it. But the NHL won't do anything because Trouba didn't actually make contact. And you can't get somebody on an attempted penalty, although you should. Anyway, that was my, by the way, Tampa's great. And I think they'll close it out tomorrow.
Yeah.
In game six at home. Is Tony La Russa too old? That was our winner, Dennis. I mean, what the answer is, well, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the answer. Why was Tony La Russa hired?
Yeah.
Well, by the White Sox? Why was he even hired? So, look, this doesn't have to be about walking Trey Turner in a 1-2 count with the first base open in the sixth inning of a game you trailed by one. It doesn't have to be about that. And I said this earlier. It wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen. It just wasn't. It wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen in baseball. I mean, I think it's not the right play, but I also don't think it's necessarily egregiously bad. I mean, and I said this earlier, if I were La Russa, I wouldn't go up there saying 1-2 in the count, blah, blah, blah. I would simply say Max Muncy's hitting 160. Trey Turner's hitting 300. I've got a base open and another run in scoring position. I'm going to take my chances with a 160 hitter. That would be the better answer. Going to 1-2 count and blah, with lefty. Nah, man, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Right? But just saying, I mean, Trey Turner's the reigning batting champion in the National League, and he's hitting 300. That would have been a much better answer for Tony La Russa. But the answer to the question, is Tony La Russa too old? Yes. That's the answer.
My big thing is that we've taken the nuance of baseball out. It's gone. In terms of everything's just determined by a number now. Like, what's the point of even having a manager if you're just going to look at a spreadsheet and determine what you're going to do next? For example, when the Rays and the Dodgers are playing in the World Series, you have your best pitcher on the mound in a must-win game, but analytics told you, no, I got to go to my bullpen. No, that's my best pitcher.
Oh, you're
I
going
want
after
him having
Kevin
the ball.
Cash right
yes.
here. For taking but, Blake Snell out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for Blake Snell. But here's my thing. Is that,
you're 100% right.
But here's my thing is that whatever happened to, I have a 1-2 count on a hitter. Like, okay, yeah, he's hitting 300. Okay, great.
Right.
Well, I still have a 70% chance of getting the dude out.
Right.
What's a greater odd? I get Muncy, whatever. No, you have a 1-2 count on a guy. Don't intentionally walk. That's just, again, analytics are just taking over the game to the point where there is no more game.
You are absolutely correct about this because here's the better play.
This is right? where you lose fans.
Again, I don't think it's the right play. If to me, the mistake Tony La Russa really made was making it about he's this with a 1-2 count, all of that, right? Because putting the guy on is not my move. You know what the move is? Oh, it's a 1-2 count. I have first base open. My pitcher does not have to make a pitch that you can hit. I can throw three more balls out of the strike zone and try to get you to chase a bad pitch
exactly.
and get yourself out. That's what I can do. Tony La Russa apparently didn't trust his pitcher to do that. So he put him up there against a guy who could hit one out the other way. Again, Max Muncy, career-wise, better against left-handed pitching than right-handed pitching. I'm sure that's somewhere on Tony La Russa's spreadsheet. But maybe it was in fine print and he didn't have his reading glasses because he's a billion years old.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. I just, my whole thing is like, you have a 1-2 count on the guy. Go get him out.
Right. And again, first base open gives you the luxury of not having to throw a pitch in the strike zone to get him out. And again, we look at analytics, and analytics have hurt baseball more than they have helped baseball. Analytics have given us, oh, home runs are way better than singles, which they are, but always going for the home run has given us home runs, strikeouts, and walks, the three true outcome game that we have now. So we have lower batting averages. We have more fewer balls put in play. The game's slower.
Yeah.
There's no good.
Nobody puts stress on a pitcher or defense right now to open up a gap between the first baseman and the second baseman for a hit through. Like, no one does that anymore.
Right.
The game's just ruined, mm-hmm. in my opinion. And this is where baseball is going to die out and continue to fizzle out.
Luke Dukakis, well, it's not going to fizzle out.
I think it will. I'm serious. There's no – look at the fan base for baseball.
It's older.
It's exactly. Right. You're not building any sort of young fan base because this is what your game has become.
We'll see if that continues. I actually think that we're going to start seeing more and more. I think we already are starting to see more and more young people who are into it based on some of the athletes that we now have in the game. But one thing analytics have given us, which is good for baseball, less bunting.
I disagree.
What, you like bunting?
Why not?
It leads to fewer runs. You like fewer runs? You into fewer runs?
I like nuance and strategy in a game.
Again, there are times where the bunt is acceptable. I'm not even going to say the right move. Like the sacrifice bunt I'm talking about. Oh. Not bunting for a base hit. Or suicide squeeze.
A suicide squeeze. Give me that all
those
day.
Are fun.
Oh, those are
fun
great.
Plays.
Yeah.
More fun plays. A sacrifice bunt, there's nothing fun about a sacrifice bunt. In fact, East Carolina sacrifice bunted in the first inning. Did not score as a result. Nobody out, man on first, sacrifice bunt. You already got three runs in. I can't. I just can't. I would not bat if my coach told me to do that. I'm sorry. You can have this. I'm out. You can have this. All right. Luke Dukakis is going to join us from the NNO. We do this every Friday. Next. Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, let's say I have more than $1 million balance in my 401k.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. How can that actually come back and bite me?
Well, because, and this is a thing that we it's a mirage. You see mirages. I've ridden in the desert before. You see what's water ahead, but it's not there. Well, your financial mirage is thinking that that total balance in your 401k or your IRA is yours. We have two people that want to get a hold of it, two uncles, Uncle North Carolina and Uncle Sam.
Right.
Both of them are going to do some damage to that balance. Depending on what kind of other income you have, you could lose 40% of your value. So if you're looking at $1 million IRA, maybe it's only worth $600,000 to you. So how do we get around this? Well, you don't get around it because you end up in jail if you try to do that.
But you
can do tax planning to minimize the effect of taxation into the future. The tax train is coming, Adam. We need to make sure to minimize the effect of the derailment of our financial accounts. And for the next 10 people, we'll do it at no cost or obligation. Put together your very own tax and retirement plan.
800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter. My friend from the News and Observer, columnist, reporter extraordinaire, Luke Dukakis, who joins us every Friday. No agenda today. We don't have any games to cover. We're not just off of the end of our season, but we are going to talk about the Canes here. So I'll ask you the question we put on Twitter. Is Tony La Russa too old, Luke?
Yeah.
See, that's the right answer, too. We don't even need to know for what. We just
I'm too old for, yes, too old for. Not too old to retire.
No, he's the perfect age. He's not too young to retire. He's beyond he's past his sell by date. I don't know. Tony decided to walk Trey Turner. I just thought his answer had to be. He didn't have to be condescending about it. And I think that's where a guy like Tony La Russa kind of goes off the rails is when he insists that he's smarter than everybody.
And I don't think there's anything in his sort of whatever we're calling this third career that indicates he's smarter than anyone these days. I mean, maybe in 1986, he had things figured out that no one else did. But I'm not sure in 2022. I don't know. It's not 1983, Adam. Let's put it that way. They're not winning ugly.
No, he doesn't have Ron Kittle to run out there anymore. Yeah, he does. He just doesn't have those guys.
No
look,
Baines.
He was better when he had, you know, McGuire. He's very pro McGuire. When he had McGuire and Sosa or Canseco and all of those guys in Oakland and the great pitching staff, he was much better when he had that. Eckersley out of the bullpen. He was good in St. Louis. Yeah, I mean, it's not the same. The White Sox were better before he got there.
How do we end up on a Tony La Russa tangent? We spent
because I asked you if he was too old. Because I was just talking about Tony La Russa.
I had a very short answer for that, and we've managed to.
I apologize.
That's my fault. Not at all what I was prepared to talk to you about today.
All right. Let's get to ice real quick. We had exit meetings last week, and this guy said this, and they want to return. Everybody wants to return. Hurricanes have 10 free agents, unrestricted, restricted. There are really four major ones. Tony DeAngelo, Martin Natchez, Vincent Trocheck, Nino Niederreiter. Well, yeah. If we wanted to throw a fifth one in there and say Ethan Bear, I don't think he's major. But of those first four, how many do you think are back, and what do you think the number is?
I think two. I think two are back, and I'll tell you, I think Trocheck's gone. I think he's going after the brass ring, and that's fine.
Yep.
You know, the Hurricanes made the offer sheet for Jesperi Kotkaniemi with the theory that he would eventually be a top six center. I don't know that he's ready yet, but you can either do a stopgap fill of the Trocheck hole or roll the dice with Kotkaniemi and hope he's ready to take a huge leap forward. The other one is Tony DeAngelo. It's been such a good fit for him here. He's got a really, really weird arbitration case. I don't think he has nearly as much leverage as people think he does.
Great.
Just because of it would be an absolute gong show of an arbitration hearing with a guy who was bought out and all that, all right. Those things that delivered him here. So I think it would be smart for both Tony and the Hurricanes to find a deal that keeps them out of arbitration. I think in arbitration, the Hurricanes come out smelling like a rose, because there's nobody you can compare him to given his up and down history. So I think he has less leverage than most people do. So that's one and one. I think Nino will be back. I think what he did with Jordan Staal and Jesper Fast, he may not be the goal scorer he was earlier in his career, but I think he's established that he can be a legit two-way forward who's got some size. Obviously, he did not score in the playoffs. Not many people did, but he's capable of getting hot. And I think probably the question there, as you and I have talked about in the past, is it going to end up being term and sort of, you know, can you get a deal that doesn't box you into a corner? I think 2 years maybe for Niederreiter at a reasonable price makes sense for him, makes sense for the Hurricanes. If he's willing at this point in his career to transition into sort of from a top six to a top nine role. And then Marty Natchez, the things he said coming out of the exit interview that, you know, he didn't feel he and Rod Brindamore were on the same page and he wants to play center. Like, what planet is this guy living on? Rod Brindamore gave him enough rope to leash up a team of oxen. I mean, it was insane. No other coach in the league would have still had Marty Natchez on the power play during the Rangers series. Not a single other coach in the league. And then to come out and say that you want to play center when you're barely doing your job at wing, you haven't earned that. This is a guy who, yes, we pick on Marty Natchez because his upside, his ceiling is so high, but I feel like we've reached the point with him, and maybe we had before this season, where it's time for a change of scenery, because I just don't know that it's going to work for him here. As we didn't see any of the moments in the playoffs that we saw last year against Nashville, right, where he took over not even a game or a period, but took over a sequence and changed the game. He was a complete non-factor in the postseason. It's just an utter and just a 0.0, the Blutowski of forwards in the playoffs. Now, the flip side on this is he's probably got more, despite his disappointing season, he's probably got more trade value than he did a year ago, because his case for a new contract is so weak now. Right. Like, he basically took care. Like, if the Hurricanes want to keep him, that's fine. That's their decision. I wouldn't do it, but obviously I'm not the GM and I shouldn't be. They can get Marty Natchez signed for a price that is not what they were preparing to pay him a year ago. That is also going to make him attractive to other teams because he's not going to come at the price, mm-hmm. quite frankly, that a guy who was drafted where he was should be at this point in his career. He's not there as a player. He's not going to be there as a contract either. So that's my – I got a 2-2, Adam, okay. of the four guys you mentioned.
I agree also on 2-2, but I disagree with one of them. I actually don't think Nino or Trocheck will be back. It would be great if Nino – Trocheck definitely not. But if Nino were to accept like a, you know, 8.5/2, then yeah. But I don't know. Nino's probably going to get a little bit more than that on the open market is just a guess. Maybe he won't. And if that's the case, if he comes back on a cheap 2-year deal, then that would be great. I actually think that Natchez, I don't know what kind of value he has as a standalone in a deal. Like, I don't think they can get a first round pick in return for him. Not a good one. And I think that if you're going to use him, you either have to use him as part of a deal to bring back something significant, or you're hoping to recoup a first round pick. And I don't know that either is – you have to throw in a lot more with Natchez to get something significant back. My understanding is that, first of all, they tried to sign him in the last offseason, offered him a pretty good deal. He wanted to roll the dice and shoot for the moon, what Svechnikov was getting, and it obviously did not work. I like Natchez maybe on a 2-year deal that maybe pays him an average of about – 3.5. And I think that maybe the comfort of having 2 years gets you more in Natchez, and they can just let him play center in the preseason. They know he can be a good wing. Just play him at center in the preseason and let him show what he can do. And if he can play center, then they have options. Then they can put him as a second line center and play Kotkaniemi as a third, and play Stahl as a fourth. But I also think that Jack Drury is going to be part of this mix anyway. D'Angelo, I think Tony will be back. And I think the number will be less than people would expect for somebody who was at about 0.8 points per game this year, and actually was almost at 1 point per game for a good chunk of it until the last month or so, when Tony didn't really have a good April. He had a good series against Boston, didn't have a good series against the Rangers. And then we'd have somebody to make to be mad at if Martin Natchez is back.
Well, my feeling on Natchez is, yes, the Hurricanes, the problem of will we have an issue with Natchez's salary solved itself. He bet on himself and lost.
Yeah.
But I just feel like if Marty Natchez was going to be the player that we've seen flashes of consistently, if he was going to be a top six center, if he was going to be a top six goal scoring winger, we would have seen it in his contract year. Like that was the time for him to take a huge leap forward.
And Andre. We didn't in Andre's contract year. We didn't see a good year.
Yeah, but he had less time in the league.
Right.
You know, this is a player. Marty Natchez has been given every opportunity.
Great.
I just don't see it at this point. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, I think, you know, there's issues to discuss with Svechnikov and Aho and what is their ceiling for real. I think we all know what Marty Natchez's ceiling is. I just don't know at this point that he's ever going to get there.
Let me ask you, I know you're a horse racing guy. The Belmont, we did not have the Kentucky Derby winner, Rich Strike, in the Preakness. I actually don't even know who won the Preakness, which is sad, but once Rich Strike wasn't running it, I wasn't paying attention. I have a pick for the Belmont, but I want to hear what you have to think about the Belmont. Rich Strike seems like it'd be a great pick with the way he closed the Derby, shot out of a cannon the last furlong. Who do you like at Belmont Park?
I like Barber Road. I did have early voting in the Preakness. My brother and I cashed. We hit the exact on that. So but obviously, I mean, nobody who knows has any idea what they're talking about had Rich Strike in the Derby. Barber Road. I like the way he's training. I think he's got a decent running style for this race. I have some concerns about whether the pace will fit him, but at 10-1, which he was at one point, I haven't seen what it's gone down to today. You know, I'm not a, some of the horses that are taking money, Rich Strike, We the People, I'm not as big a fan of. I think Barbara Road's pretty good value and pretty good horse.
We the People, just for current events, is a great horse. No?
Well, yeah. I mean, that, if you're picking horses based on names.
Yes.
That's a good one.
Is there a better way?
I mean, heck, if you were picking the Derby based on names, you might have landed on Rich Strike.
Yes.
So, early voting won the Preakness, also very topical. So, yeah, no, I like Barbara Road. I think that's where I would go in the Belmont if I were a gambling man, which of course I am not.
All right, final thing, Duke ahead of the curve when it comes to hiring essentially a general manager, a manager of NIL for their basketball players. John Shire, is recruiting is certainly not an issue. They seem to be ahead of the game when it comes to these types of things.
Yeah, yes and no. I think, yes, they're ahead of the game on where things are going. They have a good sense of that. I mean, part of that, I think, is when you're talking to the top of the top elite level recruits on a daily basis, you get a sense of what they're thinking. And mm-hmm. so you can adjust your strategy accordingly. I'm sure that's true for Kentucky and UNC and Kansas as well, that you really can have a finger on the pulse of what those recruits are thinking, what that generation is thinking. And in Duke's case, being a private school, unlike those other schools I mentioned, they can go and act on it right away. It's not a state employee position.
Sure.
You can create any job you want. So the flip side is, as we get deeper into the NIL era and we get into collectives and things like that, you know, I think there's another, the Duke has sort of been able to elide the philosophical question of, do these one and dones fit with the ethos of an elite academic institution? You know, does having athletes who are not necessarily on a degree track, although certainly some of them have come back and gotten their degrees, you mm-hmm. know, does that fit what we want to do as an institution? I think NIL for schools like Duke, Stanford, Northwestern, maybe Notre Dame, you have to ask yourselves, is this why we are participating in college athletics? I think that's going to be more of an issue for schools like Duke, and Stanford, and other sort of academically oriented FCS school or FBS schools than it would be for, you know, a big state school, a Michigan or whatever.
Well, I was going to say, how is it different? I mean, Michigan's a great school. Carolina's a great school. Virginia's a great school. They happen to be state institutions. How is it any different?
They're bigger, for one thing.
Oh, yeah.
And the competitive athletics is more of a revenue driver. I think when you get to the mission of these academic institutions that think of themselves as academic institutions, sure, first and foremost, not as land-grant institutions, not as state flagship universities, there becomes a sort of question of, is this why we got into this? You know, and look, I'm 100% pro NIL. You know that. Mm-hmm. We've talked about it. I think it's great that even though the implementation has been weird, I think it's great that players are getting a piece of this pie, and they should have years ago. But I do think when you get into the question of what is college athletics supposed to be, and the NCAA has lost control of that entire discussion, I think there are people on the academic side who may raise a hand at some point. I think Duke's one of the schools where that could happen.
Oh, I don't think there's any – like, that could happen and should happen from the academic side everywhere, because nobody – heck, Luke, we don't have to go back that far. 20 years ago, 22 years ago, the ACC doled out $9 million in shared revenue to their then 9 member institutions. In 2000, the number was $9 million per school. That was tops. That was ahead of the SEC. Nobody foresaw this is where we would be, which is, if we were still at a normal level where it wasn't a billion-dollar industry, we probably wouldn't be having any of these conversations, because it would be more along the lines of college sports. But it's not. These are now all feeder systems for the pros and their major moneymakers. Everything is just different. It just has to be looked at differently. That's what I think.
It's the live tour.
Have you watched? Did you go online and watch any of it?
Oh, God, no. I have zero interest in watching
I watched about 30 minutes of it yesterday. It looked like golf to me.
I just
didn't look any different.
I'm not any kind of PGA Tour loyalist, but I'm so anti Live Tour, Newcastle United, all of this sports washing stuff that as far as I'm concerned, the great thing about it is the nonsense that comes out of people like Phil and I don't hate Bryson as much as some people do. Patrick Reed, whatever, Patrick Reed's wife on Twitter, all that stuff. You can compartmentalize it, put it over there. It's fine. You know, I think what Graham McDowell said was unconscionable. Some of what these golfers have said, reading the talking points, is grotesque and sick. The inability to process where the money's coming from and try to pretend that it's otherwise. But you know what? Pro golfers, a lot of them, not all of them, a lot of them, they're greedy.
They are.
A lot of pro athletes are greedy. A lot of people are greedy. And if money's what really matters to you, then go crazy. Go with it. It's not how I would approach it. It's not, you know, I think the PGA Tour, like we talked about last week, needs to change in response.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to a certain extent, that's probably long overdue.
Yes.
And you need to create more guaranteed money. You need to create more of a softer landing for guys at the top while still creating that ladder to get from the Korn Ferry Tour to the Tour to the FedEx Cup playoffs. Like, you can do all that without destroying the Tour. You just kind of have to break away from some of the things that have been in place for a long time. And I think the PGA Tour can do that. And as you and I have talked about, these guys on the Live Tour, they're not getting world golf ranking points. Mm. Next summer, when they got to go to Rockville and sectional qualify for the opening, or go to Aberdeen to qualify for the British, they're gonna have a hard time.
It's good for the guys who have already established and already done their thing, but it's not good for the up and comer. It just except financially, which maybe that's all they care about. Luke DeCock of the News and Observer, I appreciate your time. Talk to you next Friday, sir.
All right, man. Good to talk to you.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19th, 2006. But it all started May 6th, 1997, with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.
The Los Angeles Angels snapped their something-teen game losing streak. And Shohei Ohtani hit a home run.
Yes, he did.
So you won. Speaking of home runs, I believe, was this the second or the third one of the game for East Carolina? They just tacked on another one.
Wow.
That's Worrell. He just went yard, so it wasn't Worrell before. It is now 7-2 Pirates there in the fifth inning. There you go. They're having a good old time in Greenville. So you're on a heater.
I am.
What are you? You are almost. You're almost into the black.
Compared to where I was, yes. Yeah. Here's the thing. I've actually over the last week have gone about plus 700.
Yeah. Absolutely. You're completely on fire. All right, sir. Let's place bets. I am at plus 229.95. You're at minus 1740. It's still way better than you were.
Yep.
So let's go.
Place your bets. Place your bets. Here we are.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slide.
Death! Okay, you can owe me. I owe you one.
All right. Give me your lacrosse bets.
Oh, you're getting a couple of them today.
I'm sure we are.
Because
I'm sure we are.
Tonight, give me the Chrome over the Redwoods with a win. Redwoods have some injuries.
What are you hammering my guy?
Nekai Montgomery?
Look,
trust me. I like Nekai. I like Miles Jones. But too many injuries on defense. A couple other midfielders out, including Sergio Perkovic, Anthony DeMeo. Those guys are out. John Sexton's out on defense. Give me the Chrome over the Redwoods and parlay that Archers over. Actually, I forget who the Archers are playing today. I messed that one up. But give me the Archers as well with a win today over the Chaos. I actually miswrote that. Archers over Chaos plus 265.
Okay, so it's Archers over Chaos, Chrome over Redwoods.
Yep, I'll be there tonight for
plus
both of those.
Oh, that's right. You're headed down.
That's right.
You're headed down for that, so you'll know right away.
Plus 265.
Excellent. All right. UEFA Nations League, because every day you have to do it. Have to do it. Man, what a grudge match this is. Ireland-Scotland?
Oh.
Ireland-Scotland. What a grudge match. Give me a draw at plus 190.
Okay. All right. Second one I have here.
Yeah.
PLL tomorrow in Charlotte. I won't be there for either of these games.
How come?
I have something tomorrow evening back here in Raleigh, so I can't stay for both. Give me the Atlas and the Cannons going over 24.5. Okay?
Right.
Over 24.5. And give me the Whip Snakes minus 1.5 goals against the Water Dogs plus 271.
I like Atlas and Cannons. That's a very interesting matchup.
Mm-hmm.
Whip Snakes and Water Dogs, I think, are the same thing.
No, far from it.
I think they're the same.
Far from it.
All right, I could be wrong. They just a whip snake sounds like something that lives in water.
Okay.
And that's what a water dog is.
All right.
So, I don't know. Okay, I'll take your word for it. Just mark down wins now. I will not be
Someone
able.
Someone will fact check me.
I will not be able to tell you any different. All right, I've got tomorrow's hockey game. Tampa Bay is going to wrap this sucker up. I'm tempted to go as far as to pick a final score of 2-0, but I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to take Tampa minus a goal and a half at plus 155.
Okay.
Tampa minus a goal and a half plus 155.
I don't hate that bet. All right, UFC 275 this weekend, flyweight championship in the women's division. Valentina Shevchenko, give me a win by TKO. Knockout or DQ for Shevchenko, plus 180 against Talia Santos.
Isn't this the same fight that happened the last 3 weeks? No?
Same fight? I did pick someone last week to win by
you
that.
Pick,
they
you,
did.
You pick a UFC fight basically every Friday.
Yeah. And I've won a majority of them.
Didn't Shevchenko just fight?
No.
No?
No.
They don't fight every week?
No.
Okay.
Goodness.
I think they should.
Wow.
I think they should fight every week. All right. Give me Steph Curry to have a double-double tonight.
Okay.
Steph Curry double-double at plus 800.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that he'll get a lot of assists tonight. I think Boston's still winning.
I wonder what the odds are for Draymond Green to have double-digit points.
Nah, not good. Plus 18,000.
Might be
That's
worth
probably
it,
what they are.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.